Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprises throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program recorded weekly at WJR in Detroit. During the spring and summer of 2015, only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live each week from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR 760 AM in Detroit. However, both hours of this show are available each week on this podcast and are available to all of our affiliates across the state of Michigan. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the host, co-host, and producer of the program. And we got a great program today. We're going to be looking at public transportation and a unique kind of approach called 15 minutes or more. Also be talking with a Michigan Supreme Court judge about how video is transforming the legal process. And a very happy official from Royal Oak talks about a smart park, which got a big boost from its citizens. All that coming up on the Internet Advisor. Welcome to this first hour of our Internet Advisor podcast. Gary Baker, my co-host here, along with Edward Dell and Shane Hamlin in studio. Guys, good to have you all gathered around the microphones here. Been quite a week in electronic affairs here.
It sure has. Lots of rebooting going on.
Yes, indeed.
I had to reboot my car when my electronics went out in my car. And it was just the steering wheel and just the electronics on the steering column. But I just...
How do you reboot a car?
I just disconnected the battery for 15 minutes, put it back on, and it worked.
So it's not like a control-alt-delete, like pedal, accelerator, and then shift
you would
or something?
Be something like
Gary,
that, but
Gary,
no, it's just really
what
easy.
Kind of electronics are in your steering wheel? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, you know, cruise control, turn signals, automatic windshield wipers.
The voice commands.
So all that. And then, I thought I had problems, but New Horizon had to be rebooted. New Horizon is the space probe that in three more days is going to be going flying past Pluto. It's been on a 9.5-year mission. And to give you some perspective, to get around the world, we can do full duplex conversations today. Somebody in Australia, you can have a regular conversation with them,
right?
It takes a whole second to have a conversation, a round-trip conversation with a lunar module.
Somebody's on the moon.
Yeah.
There's a one-second delay?
It's a one-second delay for round-trip.
A pregnant pause,
To get to New Horizon, it's 4.5 hours one way, 9-hour round trip communication.
Oh, my word.
So it had gone out 4.5 hours before they knew that it had gone out.
Oh, my
and
word.
Then everybody scrambled. And when they sent the signal to reboot, it was still 9 hours before they got the signal back that, in fact, booted into safe mode, All of us know what safe mode is.
But, and as an IT specialist, I'm on the clock until I get confirmation that it's rebooted,
And they were, too. They were up all night waiting for this thing. On the 4th of July, that happened.
Oh, my goodness.
So everything's been rebooted. So.
It's been a week for reboots, hasn't it? I mean, we had quite a... Now, I was on vacation with my family and trying to reboot, you know, physically, emotionally, and every other way. But I did get a peek at some of the things that were going on in the world. New York Stock Exchange
went down
3.5 hours.
So was a router issue, they said?
Internal IT.
That was probably my best 3.5 hours ever, that I didn't lose money on.
But at the same time, the same day, United Airlines went down, and they lost flights all over the country for a period of time.
Is this conspiracy theory here?
Conspiracy theorists are really going nuts, because that same day, The Wall Street Journal went down.
Yeah, that's got to be a conspiracy.
Three and some Serbian-Turkish missiles were hacked on that same day.
Serious?
Yes.
Serbian? No. Turkish?
Well, I'm sorry. Turkish missiles on the Syrian border. Whatever. Yeah. I was just glancing.
And Turkish missiles on the Syrian border.
Yeah.
Were hacked.
Well, yeah, yes, but only for a short time. But it was around the same time period. So everyone's like, what is going on?
What a glorious clam chowder of conspiracy.
Solar flares.
So what happened to the Chinese stock exchange?
Chinese stock exchange was down. A matter of fact, is that possible
in a communist country? Anyway, we won't go there.
It's a coincidence, that's all.
Yeah.
Later.
They've lost a tremendous amount of value, although I did see that they came back about 5% on Friday. But the point was this was a week of rebooting.
Yeah. And then we find out that the Office of Personnel Management was a lot worse. That hack was a lot worse than originally reported.
I even wonder if we'll ever be able to imagine how bad it was. If you remember, folks, last week we had Richard Steen and I, and we were talking about There Will Be Cyber War, his new book.
Right.
One of the things that I have heard said is
that was fiction or not fiction? I'm not sure. Right?
No, the more I read of it, the more realistic it sounded. Mm-hmm. But the thing that kind of scares me about this whole thing is that there is so much information, personal information out there now about government employees, and everything from security levels that you have no idea what they could do, whoever could do with that information, and starting with blackmail, starting with, you know, breaking security clearances. I mean, it's just incredible to think of what a mess. Makes you want to become Amish. No, don't turn that phone off. No.
Yeah. I mean, medical records now with, you know, the Obama health care, everything, all the offices are going, you know, medical record, you know, digital.
Yep.
All your medical records are out there, and that can be just completely hazardous to your health. I mean,
yes.
Someone out there getting your medical records.
Absolutely. And knowing, heaven knows what they could do in terms of denying you opportunities. Mm-hmm. Because of certain things that they have found out, let's say some genetic conditions that are in your family, and saying, "I'm sorry,
we don't
think we can take you on the board, or you're fit for that position because of X."
You just blame it though on somebody hacking in and stealing your identity. You know, so what do you mean I can't qualify for a loan? That must have been something that some hacker put into my phone.
Well, it's going to be kind of interesting. We're talking about electronics actually moving into an area that for a long time has been kind of. I don't know if you could say is non-electronic because there's a certain amount of technology used in it, but has not been part of the internet. And that is the court system, the legal system.
Right.
And in just a little bit, we're going to be talking with Justice David Viviano from the Michigan Supreme Court, where he has been working on an initiative there to improve the administration of justice by using electronics. And we're going to be talking about the number of courts that have virtual courtrooms going. I'll be talking about that in just a little bit. We're also going to be talking in a little later on the program today with a couple of guys who are very interested in promoting the idea of public transportation and kind of giving ammunition to people to help do that. And also then to the city of Royal Oak, Tom Fenton's going to be with us. Very proud about quite a successful campaign they had there about their smart park. And so electronics is... unfortunately or unfortunately, they can get into more areas of our lives. And we're going to be touching on more of those as we go on with the Internet Advisor here. Thank you so much for joining us and letting us be part of your lives as well. Thank you once again for allowing us to be in your space today with the Internet Advisor on our podcast and to our affiliates. Welcome. Glad to have you with us and to be with you today. We're talking in just a moment with Justice David F. Viviano from the Michigan Supreme Court. Before we do that, a big thanks to one of our fans, Gary Halliburta, who provided us with some very delicious things that he dropped off at...
Of course, he dropped it off over the store at in Sterling Heights. And, of course, I'm on a diet, so I couldn't eat, and I was dying. You don't know how hard it was to keep that stuff away from my wife.
We're certainly glad you brought it all in.
Yes. Well, I did.
Well, there were three boxes. Yeah. Now there's only two.
My wife got a hold of it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, gentlemen, let's bring our guest to be on the air with us right now, and because I'm fascinated to find out more about what's been going on with our court system and the virtual courtrooms. First, let me introduce Justice David F. Viviano from our Michigan Supreme Court. He is the point person for judicial training and statewide e-filing. Justice, Justice Viviano, thank you very much for joining us here.
It's great to be with you guys. How's everybody doing?
We're doing wonderfully. Thank you so much for being with us. So far, none of the technology has let us down here, although this week, wow, all over the place, whether it was heading for Pluto or...
New York Stock Exchange.
New York Stock Exchange. We have not done well electronically, but... And it's kind of an interesting point to touch on, because you and some of your colleagues are involved in bringing that whole electronic world very much into the legal system. Would you talk a little bit about the scope of the virtual courtrooms in the state of Michigan?
I'm happy to do that. We are at the Michigan Supreme Court responsible. Some folks don't might not know, responsible for the administration of the local courts all across Michigan. And so we're very much interested in trying to improve how we work and try to work more efficiently and improve the service and make courts more accessible, but improve the service for our, you know, for our customers, the people who need to use the courts all throughout Michigan. And so you've touched on virtual courtrooms. That's a really, I think, significant reform, but a pretty simple one. We're trying to conduct more hearings using video conferencing technology. You know, the technology that is being used in industry. You know, we have now almost everyone, maybe not everyone, but a lot of folks have high definition televisions in their homes, and we're trying to get those interactive technology televisions installed in courtrooms all across the state. And by the end of the year, we will have accomplished that goal.
Now, how many courtrooms are there right now that in Michigan that have those video conferencing capabilities? Is there statewide?
Well, we're working on statewide. It's actually available in most courtrooms around the state right now. About two-thirds of the courtrooms have them. We have just under 600 courtrooms all across the state. The plan is by the end of the year to have each and every one of those equipped with this technology. And on the other end, the technology has already been installed in, for example, all of the state prisons, the Michigan Department of Correction facilities across our state. It's been installed in the different state mental facilities across the state. And so judges are actively using the technology and lawyers and litigants already. So it has a number of benefits to it. One is, of course, increasing court security from the standpoint of not having to transport in custody criminal defendants from state facilities to the courtroom, and obviously having fewer in custody individuals in each courthouse around the state increases security. But you can also imagine the enormous cost to the Department of Corrections for transportation.
Right.
So my nephew, Tim McClain, works for Justice Richard Bernstein, one of your colleagues there on the Supreme Court. And he was telling me that, well, you don't really have session in August. Is this what you're doing instead, is helping all the rest of the courts in Michigan move into the digital age?
Yeah, well, first of all, I know Tim, and he's doing a great job for Justice Bernstein, although I understand we're going to be losing him soon because he wants to pursue a career in law as well.
He wants to go to law school, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So can't blame him there. But Tim is correct. Our term begins September the 1st. It ends at the end of July. So we're just 1 month off from what the U.S. Supreme Court does. You might have noticed a flurry of opinions. I'm sure you did at the end of June. Our term ends at the end of July, so we have to get everything out the door by then, or else we have to start over with the cases. So we're technically in recess in August, but as you mentioned, you know, the operation of the courts around the state, that doesn't stop just because we're in recess. And so, but it's really an ongoing responsibility that we have, and that under the leadership of Chief Justice Young has been ongoing now for the last 5 years, where we're really taking a look at how the courts run. You know, we're trying to do more of sort of the modern management techniques, like customer surveys to see if folks are happy with what they're seeing.
Oh, okay.
We're implementing performance measures to measure our performance, and we're, you know, looking at things like case flow. How are the individual judges doing in managing their dockets? Are they conforming to the case flow guidelines that we set forth? And then we're trying to make that information available to the public on the internet, which I know is what you guys are interested in.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
Real important. So, and while we're on that point, I should mention we have a great website. One of the big reforms we've done the last couple of years is a complete overhaul of the court's website. So it's courts.mi.gov. And you can find information about all these things we're talking about in courts all across the state on that website. You can find information about what the Supreme Court's doing. You know, our docket, you can hear our oral arguments streaming live, and you can watch them in podcast form as
now, well. Now, by the way, I want to make sure that our audience knows that we will have that posted on our show notes as well. It's courts.mi.gov.
Right. Hey, and Justice Viviano, I understand that there is at least a lot of interest in coming up with almost like a cyber court, where, you know, you have to become really knowledgeable about a lot of activity online, and that a lot of the cases that deal with the internet and online activity might be going through a special court. Is that anytime soon, or what's your opinion on that?
Well, here's what I would say. I think that sort of the challenge of our age is to learn how to manage the flow of electronic data and records through the court system. And so we're very much working on trying to come up with a streamlined, more uniform system in Michigan. It's made difficult by the fact that our courts are on a lot of different systems. We have a lot of different vendors that are involved. It's not like the federal system, what some folks are familiar with, the PACER system, which seems to work very well. Unfortunately, we're on a number of different systems, and the funding all comes from local funding units, the local cities and townships and counties. And so all of the funding for the facilities and for the technology. And so that's the big challenge in Michigan, trying to come up with a unified system in that environment. Now, you mentioned cases involving technology issues, and of course there are a lot of those where we're grappling with legal issues in the context of technology, social media, you know, defamation cases
where
the alleged defamatory statements are made in social media. How do we deal with that type of environment and you know, lots of things like that. So we have a lot of specialized courts for things like the Veterans Court and Mental Health Court. We have a business court that we've come online now with in the last couple of years. We don't yet have a cyber court that I'm aware of, but it doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Justice David Viviano has been our guest here. We've been talking about the increasing involvement in electronics in the Michigan court system. You have police technicians now who can use the video conferencing, for instance, to participate in arraignments, pretrial conferences, and other court hearings without a lot of the time and expense involved in travel. How does Michigan, maybe as a final question for you, how does Michigan compare to other states in terms of our involvement in the use of electronics and video conferencing in trials?
Well, I think we're doing really well on the video conferencing point. I think on e-filing, which you mentioned, and something that I'm very interested in and now have some responsibility for, I think we're a little bit behind the curve because some other states have come up with a unified funding, funding from the state and a unified system. So that's something that we're working toward. I'll leave you with one little aspect of a cyber court that I just thought of to answer your question before. We actually are working on having folks be able to pay their tickets online. You can do that in most of the district courts for most of the jurisdictions around the state. And we're trying to take it a step further and let folks actually contest their tickets online so they can do that without taking a day off.
Ooh la la.
right.
I had a case where I wanted to do that, but I would have had to drive 2 hours.
Haven't had to do that. So.
Justice Viviano, thank you so much again for being with us. Justice David Viviano from the Michigan Supreme Court. And again, we'll post that courts.mi.gov where you can follow this up and follow a little bit more about the great things been done there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be with you guys.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I want to thank the folks who are Eric Dorsch, who's behind the scenes making things happen here behind the glass, as we say.
Scrambling a little bit today.
Oh, boy, what a fire drill this has been. But in any case, there's kind of a common thread, guys, that we've had here, and that has been, I think, electronics and its role in the public scene. We talked with Justice Viviano about the court system of Michigan and how it's being used effectively now and so many different ways.
Online and off and in the real world aren't two different places anymore, right? It's all together. And that's what we're seeing with the court system, bringing all of that online activity right into the real physical world. And that's what we see with the park system now.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we are delighted to bring back somebody from the city of Royal Oak, Michigan, a Detroit suburb. Todd Fenton is with us. He's the economic development manager there at the city of Royal Oak. And Todd, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you much, Foster, for having me here. Glad to be here.
Yeah, last time we were talking with folks from the city of Royal Oak, it was about a smart park initiative you had. You have a little segment of the downtown area there that had been used for some presentations. You know, I remember going over there for the street had been closed off and they had some music going on. But there was a thought of doing something a little more deliberate with it called a smart park. And we had Mayor Jim Ellison on the line with us, along with an urban planner. And at that time, you guys were going ahead with a crowdfunding effort. I think you needed, $35,000 you were going to need in order to be able to make it happen. Am I right?
Actually, our goal was a little bit more ambitious than that. It was $60,000.
Oh, okay.
And then if we reached our goal, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation would match those funds. Essentially, then we would have a $120,000 project.
All right.
And I'm happy to report back that even our wildest expectations were superseded. We ended up raising over $100,000 for this project.
Oh, that's marvelous.
People want this thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And these are people, well, I'm one of those people. So is my daughter was also one of the Royal Oak residents that contributed to it. But what was it that caught the imagination of the Royal Oak residents?
You know, inadvertently, we had not targeted this space for development, and it was really a lot of different elements coming together. It was the pop-up park summer concert series you were talking about.
Right.
We were storing picnic tables in that area, and lo and behold, people were using them and were telling us, don't take them back. meanwhile, I've been working with a lot of our technology companies throughout the city and how we can try to promote ourselves as one of the true tech hubs in Southeast Michigan. Mm-hmm. And this piece then came in with that. And once the MEDC launched this program with the crowdfund and the matching funds, we were off and running. And we spent probably 6 months doing our diligence on what this could look like and what we could get for a realistic amount of money. And luckily, it's a small space, but it's a great space. Small space means great opportunity. And and it's really one of the only downtown gathering public spaces that we have in Royal Oak. And so, as I had said, when we had met with different companies in the area about what could be contributed to the park, whether people would be interested in financially contributing to the park, we came up with, I think $60,000 is a great goal, and we were blown away by the enthusiasm and the interest in this. And right now, we're getting ready to put those dollars at work.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, that's $100,000 is way above the goal. What happens to the extra money when you go way above your goal like that? You're going to create two parks maybe in the future?
Well, we actually, when we were planning the park, we had actually did a tier system. So we knew going out for $120,000, this is what we could build in there.
I gotcha.
And then we had a wish list of, wow, can you imagine a possibility where we had $30,000 or $40,000 more to work with? And so talk about serendipity. It all just fell together in an incredible way. And again,
that's excellent.
I have to thank not only the citizens of Royal Oak, but we have so many businesses that stepped up, both financially and even one of our larger tech firms, Vectorform, they're on the second floor of the old Barnes & Noble building. They've got their summer interns. Their project this year is developing a mobile gaming app that we'll be able to send out for free from the smart park. So,
that is so cool.
It's a lot of amazing people, a lot of amazing groups coming together. And like I said, we were shocked by how interested people were
in
having this launch. So now we're coming up with a sequel, hopefully, for next summer.
we got to find it. Todd Fenton, by the way, is our guest here. He's the Economic Development Manager of the City of Royal Oak. And I guess, you know, we want to talk about some of the specifics of things that are coming there, but I hope that there are other cities around, people living in other cities, will kind of catch fire on
they're
this.
They're watching this.
Yeah, and see that this is kind of exciting, what could happen here.
It's really giving an ownership interest as well to the community. If you like this concept, we're not asking you to invest thousands of dollars. Any penny, you know, helps us do it.
And you had some really neat things you were giving away, kind of as, you know, it's like with the crowdfunding sites you had. If you gave a certain amount of money, you got, what were some of the things? You had a thumb drive, I think?
We had thumb drives. We had T-shirts. We had participation with the ribbon cutting. We actually have plaques that are going to go there at the park with some of the larger donors. Anything we can say, you know, thanks to people for contributing.
Todd, what are some of the things that are going to be in the park now that are going to be standard items that are going to be there?
Well, infrastructurally, we're looking at green design. So we will have bioswales, we'll have rain gardens, making sure that this is smart from an energy sustainability standpoint. But then in terms of bells and whistles, what could you see in the park itself? We're going to have interactive touchscreen kiosks in the park that will let you know events that are going on throughout the city. There'll be some entertainment components to it, and it'll actually give some of our local app developers a chance to showcase some of their new products as well.
That's kind
of
cool.
We will have solar panels. We'll have, of course, Wi-Fi in the area. So we really see this as a true 21st century meeting place, a smart park.
Have other cities started to express interest, or do they really have to see it before they believe it?
I have not yet, and that was part of why we wanted to do it. We had not seen an example of another city launching a project like this. And we thought, you know, how apropos to use a mechanism like crowdfunding, which is relatively cutting edge and starting to spread, to launch an initiative like this.
I think it works in particular. Royal Oak is a very tech-savvy city.
Right.
And you mentioned, Todd, the fact you have Vector Form, and I think there are a number of other high-tech companies that are coming into the area there. So you have a population that understands it. It's a young population, too, generally speaking. You know, so they're hip to what's going on there. Did I understand there's supposed to be charging stations for cars as well?
There'll be charging stations actually for your phones in the area.
Okay.
And then we're actually going to open up a part of the Center Street structure for bike parking. But actually, adjacent to the bike parking, there are electric charging stations in there for your vehicle.
Oh, I got you. Okay, they're already there. So you can not only you be able to use your Wi-Fi in that area, free Wi-Fi? Is this like a municipal Wi-Fi?
It's going to be sponsored. In fact, Bistro 82, one of our top sponsors, they came in at a $10,000 sponsorship, is sponsoring the Wi-Fi for us in the park.
That's excellent. So that is really cool. Ed, you're an old Royal Oaker.
Yeah, I used to live down there. I used to love all the different events that go down there. Is there like a time frame that you're going to, or an unveiling time that you're going to?
The park itself will be completed in spring of 2016. Right now, we're actually in the most boring part of the process, pulling up the construction documents and laying the infrastructure first. That's actually the most complicated part of the project. Bringing the technology in is the easiest part of it, and that will be done. Hopefully we don't have another Michigan winter like we've had the last couple.
Lord.
If we have cooperative weather, we may be able to be slightly ahead of schedule, but
good.
Spring 2016 for sure.
Spring. Well, we are going to definitely have to have ourselves there for that. And I do hope, Todd, that there are other cities around the state. I kind of hope that, like with our program, broadcast to our affiliates out throughout the particularly southwestern part of Michigan, that people catch this idea and realize that there's a population that's very interested in these smart park concepts. And it would be kind of neat that Royal Oak would become a template, if you will, for other cities to take a follow.
And certainly I would point other cities in the direction if they want to take advantage of the crowdfunding platform. It's called Community Spaces, Community Places, sponsored by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation.
Excellent.
It's a great program, and it's designed to really bring an ownership interest to the public and allow them to, quote-unquote, invest in a project that they think would make their city better.
And the citizens, the citizens of Royal Oak spoke up loud and strong on that. Todd, thank you so much, and our thanks and congratulations to Mary Ellison as well. For a long time, I think, in many ways, electronics has kind of seemed like the playground for the elite. You know, people who are geeks, people who have the money to spend on the equipment. And one of the threads in today's program, I think at least, has been the public engagement more and more in using electronics to better our world around us, whether it's the court system, whether it's the parks around us. And in our next segment, we're going to talk about public transportation, which is, heaven help us, been a subject of conversation for a long time. Not much doing in the area. We're talking about metropolitan Detroit, at least, but certainly an area that there's a challenge to get public engagement. And with us in our studio right now is Tom Chosky, who is a co-founder and president of Powerful, LLC. Yes. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Really happy to have the opportunity to talk about how technology can really help move forward public engagement, especially as it relates to transit. As a nerd myself and a geek, I'm a huge technology fan. And what I love about what I do is that it allows me to combine my passion for technology with really activating community and making a difference in people's
lives.
Activating
community. That's a real key point, isn't it?
Is
getting people to get their hands on, you know, and I think in particular with public transportation, at least in the city of Detroit, it has been so discouraging. I mean, I can remember can anybody else remember the monorail that we were going to be putting up under during Coleman Young's administration? We can't do it because it'll cost too much. And now it's probably about 15 times as much.
Right, and way later than every other city our size, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's been hard to really get technology to be useful in the in the transportation world, but now we're starting to see as more and more people are using mobile technology,
yes.
I can be standing at a bus stop and figure out that the bus is right around the corner, can I?
Yep. The great thing is that mobile technology especially has really been moving transit forward. So one of the most visual ways and tactical ways that that's been manifest is with the Text My Bus app implemented by the Detroit Department of Transportation.
Oh.
So people can use their mobile device to find out where their phone is. But we think that there's a lot of opportunity to bring that to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So even as we're going into this debate about public transit, you know, everyone knows transit, everyone remembers, a lot of people remember transit. But what they need to make sure happens is that their voice is heard when these plans are being made.
Mm.
You know, we're entering a season right now, heading into 2016, when the newly formed Regional Transit Authority is going to be asking voters to approve a millage to fund a new transit system in the region.
Mm.
What we need to do is we need to make sure that everyone's voice is heard at the table so that that plan is as inclusive as possible.
So how do you do that? How do you engage them to get engaged?
Well, the traditional way of doing it has been, I'm sure everyone's seen those paper flyers, 8.5 by 11 taped up on a board, come to a community meeting.
Suck in my door.
Yeah. Six people show up. That's pretty standard. But with digital technologies, we have the ability to now reach at scale all sorts of different communities and target them with specific questions.
Mm.
Implementing digital surveys, doing polling through text messages can reach different communities at different times. So rather than a blanket approach, or unfortunately what some organizations have done, which is kind of a check the box on public engagement, we have the opportunity to segment our populations and get the input we need from the groups where it's most relevant.
Mm. And you kind of using the wisdom of crowds to do some of that, right?
Crowdfunding.
Well, this is even crowd decision making.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And it's kind of that community spaces, community places was the crowdfunding thing that was used for the smart park. But this is kind of like, if you will, going a step beyond that or above that to the decision making.
It's different, right?
Yep.
And then also the democratization of information and access to information so that people know what to advocate for.
How does the 15 minutes or better organization fit into that?
Perfect. So 15 minutes or better is a project that we're working on, my company along with a couple of other people, to really help spread that information about transit. So we talked about how technology can allow people's voices to be heard. Well, we also need to make sure that for transit, which is something a lot of people in the region may not interact with on a daily basis right now, we got to make sure that they have the tools necessary to be those effective advocates, right? They need to know the lingo. So when they're dealing with their representatives or dealing with the RTA, they're asking those pointed questions that the elected officials can't just shirk away from.
So this is kind of ammunition for them when they enter into that public debate. By the way, we're talking with Tom Chosky, who is the co-founder and president of Powerful LLC. What is your organization and how does it fit into that process?
Sure. So Powerful LLC, we are a public engagement firm. So this is really our bag, doing public engagement. And, you know, we're a bunch of young guys here in Detroit.
Cool.
And, you know, we are very tech savvy. And so we see technology as a way we can really help to democratize and really bring to the next level public engagement.
Has this worked in other areas?
You know, it has.
Examples?
And it's getting better. Something that we did locally, actually, was we worked with the Detroit Riverfront Conservancy on creating a plan for a new transit system along the Detroit riverfront, multimodal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what our team did is we identified the key constituents, the key stakeholders.
I gotcha.
And we reached out to each group in a unique way. So we were asking the business owners, how could this benefit them, and tailoring the discussion around them, then going to and activating the residents and talking to the residents in their own language.
You give me so much more hope, because I tell you, honestly, in the past, there's been kind of this general plea of, let's do something with public transportation, and it hasn't seemed to go anywhere. But you sound like you're working at a very savvy level with the influences, the pulling the right chains.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, honestly, all we're trying to do is just empower the people.
There
we get the hope is we get the hope from the people who are hungry for change. And through 15 Minutes or Better, which is a digital video project our team is working on, we hope to give people that ammunition so that they can really start to push even further.
Boy, public engagement, that is, I think, the big hook here, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Really trying to get the public involved in this as well. With your organization, Powerful LLC, and what hope do you think we have for this? When do you think we can get this thing off the ground?
Well, I think that there's phenomenal hope, because we're really starting to see a sea change. You know, not sure if anyone can tell from my voice, but I am a bit younger here.
Okay, all right, 20s. Come on now. Let's not go there, okay?
I'm just saying, you know, I'm a millennial. And
there
a lot of times people think that transit and technology are things solely in the domain of my generation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. We really see a great opportunity to activate people who are in, especially the boomer generation, who are starting to see cars are great, but As you get a little bit older,
sure,
you want more of a community. You want more of a neighborhood around
Absolutely.
You.
Right. Absolutely.
And with the great ways that you know, older generations are starting to embrace technology, especially mobile technologies, we can use technology to not only activate within the millennial generation, but even throughout a wide range of demographics, so everyone's voice can be heard.
I think so. You know, I think one of the hopes for Detroit, the downtown Detroit, is precisely people, millennials like Tom.
Right.
Because you guys seem to be taking over downtown Detroit.
Well, we don't
want
to take
over. Gilbert.
We don't want to take over. What we want to do is we want to make sure that it's inclusive. We want to help push it forward.
But you're the public that is engaged, and that I find exciting. You know, young people, and at a time of life when you're full of hope and optimism, mm-hmm. you haven't had your knees skinned too many times, the rest of us.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you're leading that kind of public engagement.
But it's leading, too. It's not just only. They're integrating with the rest of
Detroit.
Exactly,
in a very savvy way. Yeah. Tom, we've run out of time right now, but I want to thank you very much. Tom Chosky, kind of pulling the cloud back a little bit and letting us peek at some of the things going on behind the scene. Powerful LLC is his company, and the program is 15 minutes or more. We're going to have links to those things on our homepage as well for people who want to get involved and find out a little bit more information about that. Tom, thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you so much for having me. Really glad to be here.
Thank you, Tom.
You're delighted to have you here. Well, folks, I hope that the thread of public engagement is something that's caught your imagination wherever you happen to be listening. This is just hour number one of the Internet Advisor. And for those of you who can and have decided to stick around for the podcast, we got another great hour coming up, and that's the one where we answer questions live from our listeners on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM, the great voice of the Great Lakes. And that's coming up in just a moment. So stay tuned.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll find past podcasts, our toolkit of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget, look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
For a long time, I think, in many ways, electronics has kind of seemed like the playground for the elite. You know, people who are geeks, people who have the money to spend on the equipment. And one of the threads in today's program, I think at least, has been the public engagement more and more in using electronics to better our world around us, whether it's the court system, whether it's the parks around us. And in our next segment, we're going to talk about public transportation, which is, heaven help us, been a subject of conversation for a long time. Not much doing in the area. We're talking about Metropolitan Detroit, at least, but certainly an area that There's a challenge to get public engagement. And with us in our studio right now is Tom Chosky, who is a co-founder and president of Powerful LLC. Yes. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Really happy to have the opportunity to talk about how technology can really help move forward public engagement, especially as it relates to transit. As a nerd myself and a geek, I'm a huge technology fan. And what I love about what I do is that it allows me to combine my passion for technology with really activating community and making a difference in people's
lives. Activating community. That's a real key point, isn't it?
Is
getting people to get their hands on. You know, and I think in particular with public transportation, at least in the city of Detroit, it has been so discouraging. I mean, I can remember can anybody else remember the monorail that we were going to be putting up under during Coleman Young's administration?
Yeah. You know,
we can't do it because it'll cost too much. And now it's probably about 15 times as much.
Right, and way later than every other city our size, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's been hard to really get technology to be useful in the in the transportation world, but now we're starting to see as more and more people are using mobile technology, I can be standing at a bus stop and figure out that the bus is right around the corner, can I?
Yep. The great thing is that mobile technology especially has really been moving transit forward. So one of the most visual ways and tactical ways that that's been manifest is with the Text My Bus app implemented by the Detroit Department of Transportation.
Oh.
So people can use their mobile device to find out where their phone is. But we think that there's a lot of opportunity to bring that to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So even as we're going into this debate about public transit, you know, everyone knows transit, everyone remembers, a lot of people remember transit. But what they need to make sure happens is that their voice is heard when these plans are being made. You know, we're entering a season right now, heading into 2016, when the newly formed Regional Transit Authority is going to be asking voters to approve a millage to fund a new transit system in the region.
Hmm.
What we need to do is we need to make sure that everyone's voice is heard at the table so that that plan is as inclusive as possible.
So how do you do that? How do you engage them to get engaged?
Well, the traditional way of doing it has been, I'm sure everyone's seen those paper flyers, 8.5 by 11 taped up on a board, come to a community meeting.
Suck in my door.
Yeah. Six people show up. That's pretty standard. But with digital technologies, we have the ability to now reach at scale all sorts of different communities and target them with specific questions.
Mm.
Implementing digital surveys, doing polling through text messages can reach different communities at different times. So rather than a blanket approach, or unfortunately what some organizations have done, which is kind of a check the box on public engagement, we have the opportunity to segment our populations and get the input we need from the groups where it's most relevant.
Mm. And you kind of using the wisdom of crowds to do some of that, right?
Crowdfunding.
This is even crowd decision-making.
Exactly, right? And it's kind of that community spaces, community places was the crowdfunding thing that was used for the smart park. But this is kind of like, if you will, going a step beyond that or above that to the decision-making.
It's different, right?
Yep.
And then also the democratization of information and access to information so that people know what to advocate for.
How does the 15 minutes or better organization fit into that?
Perfect. So 15 minutes or better is a project that we're working on, my company along with a couple of other people, to really help spread that information about transit. So we talked about how technology can allow people's voices to be heard. Well, we also need to make sure that for transit, which is something a lot of people in the region may not interact with on a daily basis right now, we got to make sure that they have the tools necessary to be those effective advocates, right? They need to know the lingo. So when they're dealing with their representatives or dealing with the RTA, they're asking those pointed questions that the elected officials can't just shirk away from.
So this is kind of ammunition for them when they enter into that public debate. By the way, we're talking with Tom Chosky, who is the co-founder and president of Powerful LLC. What is your organization and how does it fit into that process?
Sure. So Powerful LLC, we are a public engagement firm. So this is really our bag, doing public engagement. And, you know, we're a bunch of young guys here in Detroit.
Cool.
And, you know, we are very tech savvy. And so we see technology as a way we can really help to democratize and really bring to the next level public engagement.
Has this worked in other areas?
You know, it has.
Examples?
And it's getting better. Something that we did locally, actually, was we worked with the Detroit Riverfront Conservancy on creating a plan for a new transit system along the Detroit riverfront, multimodal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what our team did is we identified the key constituents, the key stakeholders.
I gotcha.
And we reached out to each group in a unique way. So we were asking the business owners, how could this benefit them, and tailoring the discussion around them, then going to and activating the residents and talking to the residents in their own language.
You give me so much more hope, because I tell you honestly, in the past, there's been kind of this general plea of let's do something with public transportation, and it hasn't seemed to go anywhere. But you sound like you're working at a very savvy level with the influences, the pulling the right chains.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, honestly, all we're trying to do is just empower the people. Where we get the hope is we get the hope from the people who are hungry for change. And through 15 Minutes or Better, which is a digital video project our team is working on, we hope to give people that ammunition so that they can really start to push even further.
Boy, public engagement, that is, I think,
exactly.
the big, big hook here, if you will, really trying to get the public involved in this as well. With your organization, Powerful LLC, and what hope do you think we have for this? When do you think we can get this thing off the ground?
Oh, I think that there's phenomenal hope, because we're really starting to see a sea change. No. Not sure if anyone can tell from my voice, but I am a bit younger here.
Come on now. Let's not go there, okay?
I'm just saying, I'm a millennial. And
there
a lot of times people think that transit and technology are things solely in the domain of my generation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. We really see a great opportunity to activate people who are in especially the boomer generation, who are starting to see
that
cars are great, but As you get a little bit older, you want more of a community. You want more of a neighborhood around
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Right.
With the great ways that you know, older generations are starting to embrace technology, especially mobile technologies, we can use technology to not only activate within the millennial generation, but even throughout a wide range of demographics, so everyone's voice can be heard.
I think so. You know, I think one of the hopes for Detroit, and the downtown Detroit, is precisely people, millennials like Tom.
Right.
Because you guys seem to be taking over downtown Detroit.
Well, we don't want to take
Dan
over.
Gilbert.
We don't want to take over. What we want to do is we want to make sure that it's inclusive. We want to help push it forward.
But you're the public that is engaged, and that I find exciting. You know, young people, and at a time of life when you're full of hope and optimism, you haven't had your knees skinned too many times the rest of us.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you're leading that kind of public engagement.
But it's leading, too. It's not just only. They're integrating with the rest of
exactly,
Detroit.
Exactly, in a very savvy way. Yeah. Tom, we've run out of time right now, but I want to thank you very much. Tom Chosky, kind of pulling the cloud back a little bit and letting us peek at some of the things going on behind the scene. Powerful LLC is his company, and the program is 15 minutes or more. We're going to have links to those things on our homepage as well for people who want to get involved and find out a little bit more information about that. Tom, thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you so much for having me. Really glad to be
here. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, delighted to have you here. Well, folks, I hope that the thread of public engagement is something that's caught your imagination wherever you happen to be listening. This is just hour number one of the Internet Advisor. And for those of you who can and have decided to stick around for the podcast, we got another great hour coming up, and that's one where we answer questions live from our listeners on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM, the great voice of the Great Lakes. And that's coming up in just a moment. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. The good advice continues on the great voice of the Great Lakes. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor. And we have got phone lines open right now to answer your questions about your computers. Here's the number, 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. I've got a studio full of smart folks here just aching to answer your questions. 800-859-0957. Welcome aboard, and thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker in studio with me, my co-host. Good to have you here, Gary.
It's great to be here. Wonderful show. First hour was great. People can listen to it on the internet, on our podcast.
Absolutely.
Either in iTunes or off of our site. And this is the second hour that we're doing.
So you're going to be hopefully giving us a call quickly, and Zeke from Flint will be with you in just a moment. Let me repeat the number again, 800-859-0957. And our mantra is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. It helps so many people so often. Eddie Rudell is in studio here. Ed, good to have you here.
Always great to be here, Foster. Thank you.
The man who is the garage sale expert. Been garage sailing this afternoon, I understand.
Yes, yes. Working at a garage sale this time, not shopping.
And Shane Hamlin with us. How are you doing, Shane?
I'm doing good. I know we're all doing good. Now we got our stomachs full here.
Oh, right? You got to tell folks.
Well, we had one of our listeners stop by my store in Sterling Heights and drop off some, I guess, Polish bakery goods, right?
Oh, they are so good.
Jerry Halliburta, great, great gentleman.
Bless you, Jerry.
Yes, bless you.
We have been enjoying the angel wings and a whole bunch of other things. Okay.
What'd you call them?
Is that what they're called? I called them powder puffs.
You called them.
Nalashniki is the word that I had heard.
Yeah.
I was told many years ago that was what they're called, but their angel wings are they're powdery and they're delicate and they're just wonderful.
And really good.
And they will torpedo any diet on the planet. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get ourselves going and say hello to Zeke from Flint. Zeke, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we start things off by answering a question for you?
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Yep.
Hey, Zeke.
Go ahead.
I recently sold my HP computer.
Okay.
And it has a built-in recovery system. Now, I did that, and what it says is it takes it back to the factory
settings.
State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, factory settings.
Yeah, so I did that, and that was successful, mm-hmm. and I sold to a man.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible that, say this, for example, this man is a real geek.
Yeah.
Can he still get into that hard drive and find out what I had in there, or did that get it erased completely?
Very good question.
Shane, you have more experience in this than I do.
Could I get information? Yes, yeah. I could. I have software that can dig deep through the layers and recoveries and so forth.
Even though he set it back to factory settings.
Correct. I mean, I can get in. I mean, four hard drives have been formatted two or three times. I can still get data. Now, I'm not going to get all the data, and it's going to be raw data,
mm-hmm.
and you really got to go through it and pick out what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, someone that knows what they're doing, yeah. But the average gentleman or the average guy, no.
Yeah, I mean, even someone like me would have difficulty doing it. Shane's one step up above me.
It would
me.
Take an expert.
Yeah, it would take an expert.
So,
it's not 100%.
No,
There are some programs. Duke Nukem. Am I right? Ed was a program that was
That's a computer game. I think it's called Derek's Boot Nuke.
That's Derek's Boot and Nuke. That's
That was one of them. But you know, it was a forensic. Disk erase program, but when you run that, you also lose your recovery partition.
He doesn't care, and I think he's passing it on to somebody else.
Right.
Although I see what you're saying.
Yes,
you would lose the recovery partition for the person buying the machine.
Yes. And if he ran that utility, it would indiscriminately probably erase everything on the computer, and then he wouldn't be able to recover it and put it back to factory settings.
Okay, guys, can you explain?
Unless he created the media, like the Windows recovery media.
Okay. Can you guys explain for our listeners, just kind of quickly, why it is we say that when you erase a hard drive, and, you know, if you're going to pass a computer on, you either want to destroy the hard drive or that if you just do kind of a single pass on it, you're not really getting rid of things.
No, you really need to degauss it.
Degauss it. Okay. Yeah. And tell me what that means.
Well, it just means you use very strong magnets to erase what's on the there so that nobody can actually ever get back to it.
Right,
because once you delete something, it's still on your hard drive.
That's
right?
That's the point I wanted to make to people.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
it's harder to find.
Yeah, you'll have to. Yeah,
because the index is gone.
Here's, but you can
find it.
Yeah, here's an example. We're selling used solid state drives right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we're using a piece of software that is DOD regulated to
Department of Defense.
Yes, that will go through and to
multiple
their specifications
tests.
Multiple times,
yep,
multiple tests.
Like 12 times, 12 passes, something like that.
And
so that'll work too.
I won't be able to recover from that.
Yeah.
So Zeke, have we kind of set your mind at rest to some extent?
Well, are you saying if I recovered it, say 12 times in a row? Would that do it?
No.
Yeah. No, it won't do it. It'll make it harder, but it won't do it. If you give it to somebody you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you give it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, then wipe the hard drive or just or just not give them a hard drive, or just use, like, you know, boot and nuke or something like that, a free software to format it.
Reformatting, just reformatting won't work.
Now, remember what Gary said. If you degauss it with a magnet, the hard drive shot then at that point. You're not going to reuse that hard drive.
Right, you won't be able to give it to the computer. The drive. So here's what I do when people have asked me this question. Most computers still allow you the ability to create a recovery media, either on an external drive or using CDs or DVDs. So you have the ability to burn DVDs. Once you have that ability to use the bootable CDs or DVDs to recovery your computer, then what you do is you use the boot and nuke program. It's and then that'll erase everything in the hard drive, and it'll do it multiple times. Then you use the CD media to install the operating system again, and your data's safe.
Ah, I got you. Then you put the operating system back on.
And that's how we would.
Okay, Zeke. So I hope we've given you and the rest of our listeners something to give you a little peace of mind when you pass a piece of machinery on and you try to sell it. Zeke, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah. Can I ask you one quick question?
If you hold on, we'll give you a chance to do that during the break. Thanks so much. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. You know, you might consider us like your neighborhood computer shop, only even more convenient, because no matter where you are, whether you're south of the border, down Toledo way, or you happen to be somewhere else within the sound of our voices here on WJR, give us a call at our 800 number, 800-859-0957, and you'll get the kind of wealth of experience and talent and just the years of having their hands inside computers that our guests who are in studio here, our expert guests, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Shane Hamlin have. And it's, as I say, it's kind of like walking into your neighborhood computer store.
But it's free.
But it's free. That's the best part of it, Eddie.
You know, Foster, you and I were talking on the drive-in today about Microsoft and how last week there was an announcement that they're laying off 6,700 employees.
Yeah.
And it's in their phone division. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying, oh, is this the end of Microsoft? And
6,700? That's like a drop in the bucket.
It is. Well, you have to remember, how long ago did they purchase Nokia? A year ago?
A little over a year ago. Yeah. Almost 2 years.
And what always happens a year after that, after you acquire a company?
Yeah, you declare it was a failure and move on, right?
Well, that's what the press was saying. I'm thinking you got two different organizations.
Yeah.
You got duplicate HR. You got duplicate development departments.
Yeah.
And after they've worked through them and combined them, there's gonna be layoffs.
I certainly hope.
And so I hope this isn't the end of the Microsoft phone.
The Windows
phone.
Shane,
I know
you
are.
I love my phone. I'm the big defender of the Windows phone.
Well, my wife Ginny has it, and to be honest with you, I really like it. It was the 1520. You know, that big one, the monster one. Yeah. She loves it, and it's a great phone.
And I had someone at work telling me, you know, I got this new Windows 8, and I'm coming up with a Windows 10 soon, and I want to download apps, but I can't find the local TV stations here in the Detroit area. They do not make Windows-based phone apps, or for your PCs as well. So if I go to the Microsoft store and try to download an app, they can't find it, because they only make it for...
That'll be changing.
Yeah.
I think that'll
I'm
be changing.
I'm hoping that'll be changing with Windows 10.
Because... At the end of the month, July 29th, Windows 10 comes out, and that is really going to be kind of homogenizing, I think, that whole experience of Windows on all devices.
On everything. I mean, even the Microsoft ban, everything's being released for developers to develop tiles and apps for both the Windows 10 phone, Windows 10, and the Windows ban. Because the Windows ban is actually doing fairly well sales-wise.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot better than Apple's Apple Watch. Apple Watch is down, 90%? 90% is down. Apple Watch is down in sales. 90%.
Right. 90. Well, after the big open. Well,
and the Microsoft
the cost
band
too.
Will, you know, if you were a gamer, wouldn't you want to develop a game app that works with your band and your Xbox?
Yeah, sure.
Come on. Yeah. So, I mean, once this homogenization takes place with Windows 10, I really do think we're going to see a lot more apps.
I want to do one thing, by the way, guys, before we get to our next caller. 800-859-0957. Hey, folks, don't do what last few weeks people have all been waiting to the end of the hour to make your call. If you call right now, you have a much better chance of getting your question on the air right now.
We get that rush.
800-859-0957. Yeah, and it's towards the end of the program. MI Tech News is going to be on with Mike Brennan, so we want to get your question in. Please take advantage of this free group of experts here to get an answer for your question. 800-859-0957. Hey, for Zeke from Flint, you asked about a utility and to erase your hard drive, and we have the guys found that it's dban.org. That's D as in dog, B as in boy, A, N as in Nancy, .org.
Or you could call it Derek's Boot and Nuke.
Right.
That's what each letter stands for.
And that is where you'll find that erase software. You'll find that there. So again, for Zeke and for the other folks who are looking for an effective way, as effective way as you can, of erasing your hard drive before you pass on a machine,
you know,
that's a good one there. Again, our phone lines are open for your calls. Don't all make it a stampede at the end of the program. We'd love to get your answers right now. 800-859-0957.
I had a question about the erasing. Now, with solid-state hard drives, do you really need to erase those because they're solid-state?
There's still layers of data there that you still have to clean out. I mean, there's still a write layer that you still have to, you know, magnetic. And
so a lot of people just think they can reformat and that'll work.
For most cases, I mean, let's be real here. I mean, for most cases, reformat, slap it in, load it, you're fine.
Right.
Even if you give it to your cousin or computer to your relative or something, you're fine. They're not going
to
go...
Don't want to give it to Kevin Mitnick. He might find something
to be totally
on it.
Honest with you, my computer, I wouldn't care less because of what? If they want to see my pictures to Cozumel, they're more than welcome. I really don't care. I mean, I'm not one of those privacy guys. I don't care too much about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't bother me all that much, but... You know, yeah, you have to continually wipe, and we're doing that, you know, with those solid-state drives.
Okay. Guys, we just came back from our vacation. Well, of course, tons of pictures have been taken. I'm just curious, what do you use to organize your pictures? You know, like, for instance, from summer vacation or things like that.
I just use the albums from my iPhone. My iPhone, my iPad, and my computer all have the photo stream on it, and then I just pull them off and put them in albums.
Okay. Ed, how about you?
I really just take a few pictures.
What's
and then
organized?
I back them. I don't organize them. I really don't. It's like, where's that damn picture? I just scroll through them.
I have almost 6,000 images, you know, so organizing them is desperately important. Shane?
My Windows phone, my Windows computer, everything's all OneDrive. It's all synced up.
OneDrive is where it's organized.
Yeah. Right.
Everything's synced for me.
And that's organized in the cloud.
Right.
Yes.
So that you never lose them.
Right. I was wondering if any of you have gone to Google Photo, because I understand that Google has put out something that helps people to organize their photos now.
What's Google?
Oh, I forgot. That's a dirty word for you, isn't it?
That's the evil empire.
It is.
So I don't use it because I use the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I find that my system works. Now, my sister has 32,000 images. She aggregates from all people, all the other family members, and she has a system that she uses, but it's, you know, she takes time and
are we going to have some sort of intervention coming up soon?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's like, you really, do you need that many? How many of them are duplicates? The scary part is they're not duplicates.
It's a digital,
not often anyway.
A digital hoarder. I've never really heard of that before.
32,000.
I asked her how you find it, and she goes, toom, toom, to hear her. You want it from this year, and you want it from these two people.
If she could keep it organized, that's wonderful.
I find is the problem, and the problem is with digital photos, you take more. Like, I will, matter of fact, there's this one thing on the iPhone, it's called HDDR, isn't it called? HDR, I think it is. And the object of it is that you can take a whole bunch of images, like 12 images, and then pick from them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't pick from them, you've got those 12 images that are cluttering up your device and need to be organized as well.
It's amazing. I mean, not too long ago, remember, we had cameras with the SD cards and they could hold, you know, 50 photos. I mean, not that long ago.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how quickly this has gone, right?
And
you're talking 20,000 photos.
And what's hard to imagine is when the new iPhone comes out, it's going to be 12 pixels, right? Instead of 8 pixels. And, you know, the images themselves are getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Let's go to Larry from Cleveland. Larry, want to make sure we get your call in. How you doing? All of a sudden, I do not hear Larry.
He's
Larry from Cleveland. I'm going to put him on hold and see if I can. Would you guys check and see if he's still there?
You know, one of the things, how long until the cameras have the ability to shoot raw photos? You know, like the Nikons and the Canons and stuff like that.
Let's go back.
Let's storage.
Hi, Larry.
Larry, hi, how you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How you doing, Larry? Guys, if Larry is there, he is a phantom or he is a figment of my imagination.
What has been the theme? Reboot.
Reboot, you're right. We have had, maybe this is all part of a grand conspiracy. The New York Stock Exchange, United Airlines.
Internet Advisor.
Internet Advisor. Uh-oh.
Gary's Car.
Gary's Car.
And New Horizons. You know, the
spacecraft. That's the learning center.
Spacecraft. Yeah.
All right, folks.
And that's going to go by Pluto on the 14th of July. That's going to be amazing to see.
I want to find out what those white spots are. That's what I really want to know.
You think they're colonies of Plutoites?
I think they're pyramids. Yeah.
Oh, pyramids.
All right, guys. We are going, folks, we are going to reboot the show, okay? And when we come back after these messages, our phone number, 800-859-0957, will be open for your question. This may be one of the strangest Internet Advisor programs we have ever done, and it is falling into this week of electronic weirdness. We've had, I think, 3 or 4 callers who have been on with us and suddenly, prink, gone. Larry from Cleveland, if you're out there, we would love to talk with you. We have rebooted, and we're going to hope that in the spirit of New Horizons, the satellite, the Wall Street Journal, United Airlines, the New York Stock Exchange, and even the Chinese stock market.
And my car.
And your car. That having rebooted, we'll be able to take your calls. And quite seriously, we were in the backside of the program. We got some folks calling in right now. That's great. We'll get you lined up. 800-859-0957. And just as soon as we get the calls lined up, we'll give you get them on the air with us. It has been a strange week, though, hasn't it?
Lots of strange things have happened. It's the conspiracists are
they've got
field
fodder
this week.
They've got fodder. I used to do an overnight program here on WJR when I first got here, from. I think it was like midnight till 3 in the morning.
You were the midnight cowboy only, yep. Not a cowboy.
Exactly. It was the Kevin Joyce program, and Art Bell followed us. And Art Bell was the one who was...
Coast to coast.
Yep. Hunting. He was hunting the aliens. Mm-hmm. Steve from Wyandotte, are you there, first of all?
Yes, I am. Loud and clear.
Hallelujah. What can we do for you, Steve?
Well, I've got an old HP that's about 7-8 years old. It's a desktop.
Okay.
And I run the monthly diagnostic program on it, and it comes back with an error message that's saying is my hard drive is dying. It's a 16 terabyte hard drive. So I was wondering, what's the best way to do that? Just replace the hard drive itself, or while it's still usable, or what?
Well, what version of Windows are you running on there?
I've got 7, and I hate 10.8.
Oh, okay, so Windows 7 is what you have on there right now.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, you should be able to perform a system image from your Windows 7 to make a backup of your operating system as it is right now.
Tell them what a system image is, then.
Well, it'll prompt him to insert DVD after DVD, and it basically backs up his computer. So after he completely backs up his computer, it'll then ask him if he wishes to create a Windows 7 restoration DVD, which will allow him to then boot up to this bootable DVD and then restore the image files that he created.
So,
I mean, that's one way of doing it.
So I have to kind of ask, Steve, you said 16 terabytes?
Yeah, I've only got about 8 on there, 7 or 8 on there.
Gigabytes. Do you mean gigabytes?
It must be gigabytes. I'm sorry. Did I say terabytes?
Yes, you did.
Well, 16 gigabytes is small, but 16 terabytes is huge. And if you had 16 terabytes, I'm assuming it's a RAID system, in which case,
It might be 160 gig. I mean,
yeah. I wanted to clarify.
Okay, but the bottom line is it's an old machine. And what you want to do is you want to save the content that's on it before it goes completely kaput, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And, you know, if it is truly only a 16 gig or 160 gigabyte, you could buy a 350 gigabyte and double the capacity solid-state drive, which will increase the performance of this thing substantially. It's like getting a brand-new machine.
It's like a
so you could make the backup image of it, and for like $60, you could buy yourself a 320 gigabyte, 5.5-inch drive. You know, right? $80 maybe.
$80.
What did I say?
$60 is a little low.
Okay.
About $80.
But you want a good one. You know, name brand one probably costs $89.
Let's go $100.
$100.
Okay. Yeah, $100.
Shane, what was your suggestion there?
You know, what you said is creating the restore disk is great. One thing that I would recommend is, so you're not creating all these, you know, 4 or 5 discs and CDs.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Just use something called Acronis. That's what we use.
Right.
Create an image. It's a clone. It'll clone your, it'll take all your data, even your programs, just the way you have it, your favorites, everything. It'll clone it to one single file. It'll create an image. And you can store that anywhere off, you can store it on an external hard drive, on a network, on another computer, on your network, or, you know, thumb drive.
Okay. And then that's using Acronis?
Acronis, yes, Acronis. It's with an A.
A-C-R-O-N-I-S. Acronis.
It's not horribly expensive. You can use...
Oh, Acronis. Yes. Acronis, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can use their... I think they even have a free version you can use.
Yep.
Or you can just buy... I think it's $40 or $39 for the software.
Right. And it might actually work better because, see, Acronis has the ability to continue copying even if there's a slight error in a file.
Correct.
Where, you know what happens when you use a Microsoft utility. It's like, sorry. Crash.
Yeah.
You know, so Acronis would be the better
choice. No, I want to take this a little step further for Steve and for me and for everybody else. So, guys, you used Acronis. We have created this image then, Shane, and
correct.
Then I would burn that onto a DVD?
No, you would just stick it on a thumb drive or an external drive.
Okay, put it somewhere, on a removable drive, yes. Or something.
Somewhere
okay.
off the system.
I put that to the side. Then I go to CompTech Services, your store out in Sterling Heights, and I buy, or anywhere, and buy a new drive. And Ed said, a solid-state drive, 256 gigabytes,
correct.
Is going to be about $80 to $100. Bucks.
And you pop it in.
You put that into the machine, and then what do you do?
You boot back to your Acronis disk. These are bootable. The software's bootable. So when you buy the software, it has you create what they call a boot disk that runs the software in boot mode.
Right.
And then what'll happen is you'll run it again, and this time instead of doing a backup, you'll do a recovery. Mm-hmm. It'll ask you, hey, where's that file you backed up? You'll direct yourself right over to it, and then literally within 20, 30 minutes, it's ready to go.
So, and that will give you back then... your operating system?
Everything.
It will give you back your files, and it will give you back your program. So not just data. It gives you the whole schmegega.
Complete clone.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Complete clone.
So Acronis, get the 360 solid state, and I'm good to go.
You are.
Yeah, yep. And any...
But do it sooner than later, because right now, if Windows is at the point where it's telling you, or the diagnostics, that you're having a failing drive... Yeah.
It's coming soon.
It's coming soon, buddy. Yep.
Reboot. Yeah. Okay. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much for help. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for asking that question, because when you ask the question, we get a chance to answer it. Actually, is answering a whole lot of different people.
And Shane, thanks for bringing up Acronis. That is one of my favorites, I do use that. But I try to stick with the integrated Windows, but then, I sometimes forget
easy.
It is. And Windows is like, oh, sorry, error. I'm sorry. Crash. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to back
you can,
up.
You can, tell, you can tell Acronis to either skip... the errors,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
try to repair them, or
it's an option. You can't tell it. It's not like you could say, "Acronis, I'd like to skip the errors," like you do Siri. Mm. But wouldn't that be great? Let's do that. let's make these optional things on the software voice activated. And,
that would be nice.
Okay, Acronis again. It's Acronis, Acronis. True Image 2015
mm-hmm.
will cost you $50.
Yeah.
Right now, if you're upgrading from another one, it's $30, and they also have a free trial that you can try as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if they let you recover back. One or the other, it's something.
It'll be limited to some extent.
Limited.
But again, if you're in a place where you need to, you want to save your computer, and it's a critical issue where your hard drive is about to go down. That's just consider that part of the investment.
And there's some tools in there as well. You can do, file manager. There's a file manager tool in there. You can do a format. There's a formatting.
You can do more than just this kind of life ring type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hey, folks, we have been able to get some calls through again, so the reboot worked. Now the question is, will you get your question in time here before we're wrapping up our program at the top of the hour? And the simple answer to that is 800-859-0957.
I was just going to say, although we'd still had a couple drops, I don't know if maybe our phone screener today is answering their questions. Who knows?
Mike, are you answering the question?
another option, if a person is having a computer that's failing, one of the things I like to have on hand is the Heron's boot CD or have the ability to have a Heron's bootable flash drive. And so on the Internet Advisor's website, underneath internetadvisor.net, you select the toolkit at the top. And when you select the toolkit, you have the ability to select bootable CDs. Heron's Boot CD, it'll take you to the website. It provides you a Windows-based interface to get to those computers that have completely failed, where they're not even bootable anymore.
Wow.
Your Windows operating system crashes or your hard drive crashes. And it allows you the ability to either back up your hard drive, you know, but even though it may be crashed, but it also allows you to maybe navigate to your My Documents.
I know,
on
you
your
use
computer.
It as like a all-purpose Band-Aid for everything. It's Hirens, H-I-R-E-N-S, Boot CD. But again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, Ed has a wonderful group of resources there called the Toolkit. And in the Toolkit, you have that plus a whole lot of other stuff that you can get a link to. And that's Hirens Boot CD. And again, you'll get that at internetadvisor.net. We're going to take a quick break in just a moment, and when we come back, Mike Brennan will be with us. We'll be talking with him about his MI Tech News headlines, and then we'll be taking a couple calls before we wrap things up. Yes, provided that the gremlins that have plagued the internet do not foil us once again. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions here at 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And I want to promise to Lillian in East Lansing and Fred in Ohio, we will get to your questions shortly. But first of all, we want to say hello to Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. Mike, thanks so much for joining us here every week.
No problem. Love it every time.
By the way, I'm so glad that you're here with us. We have been having one of these strange weeks along with the stock market, Wall Street Journal, United Airlines, and even a satellite. It's been a very strange day. But Mike is the editor of MI Tech News, and that is a weekly collection of stories about technology and entrepreneurship throughout the state of Michigan that you can receive absolutely free every Friday. And just to give you an example, for instance, Mike, you had a headline this last week about Michigan becoming the go-to place for those engaged in mobile and wireless technology.
Yeah, absolutely. It came from our friends at the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, one of our many partners. We have eight of them now that provide content, and we all cross-promote each other. But according to them, they did a study looking at the whole big picture, and that every one of these mobile tech jobs that are created creates 6.5 additional jobs in
wow.
the state. And the average mobile wireless professional is making $89,000 a year.
Woohoo! Very good reason to stick around the state and to get involved in mobile technology. Well, you know, the story has just been getting worse and worse about that federal ID hack that went on. It's now reached 22 million?
And these are people, government personnel information, their health information, you know, everything the bad guys want. They kind of the government lowballed this number earlier, but now it's turned out that it's over 22 million. It's just, I don't know what to do anymore, right? I mean, it's like every week there's a new hack, and but we kind of have, there's a variety of players involved. It's not only nation states, but it's organized crime. It's
absolutely.
Your personal information is very valuable. That's why you have to protect it.
And it just seems to have gotten worse and worse. One last thing I wanted to talk about, Mike, was that you are also publishing parts of the book There Will Be Cyber War, which is written by Richard Steenen, who was our guest last week. A fascinating conversation with him about cyber war and whether it has taken place or will take place. You are actually publishing or serializing, I think, the chapters in the book.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll do them all. I don't think Richard will let me do that. But what we are doing is teasing everybody out there, trying to let them, because it's a very good book. It's a good read. It's not real long. It's
right.
about 120 pages. It's something that everyone should read, particularly if you're in the government. I hope they're reading it.
Yes.
He puts together an interesting scenario. What we're doing is putting about 1,000 words up a week, so you get a taste of what it is. It reads like a movie. You know,
yep.
It could be a screenplay or something.
It is certainly thought provoking, and I think that's the object of it. But folks, the reason I mention this is that MI Tech News is just a collection of headlines. But as Mike said, he's got eight other organizations that are collaborating along with ourselves, IT and the D, Digital Diva, so many other groups now. It has become a great source of information from so many other resources, audio and video. And all of this, folks, is absolutely yours. totally free. And all you have to do is to go to internetadvisor.net or mitechnews.com and subscribe. And that just means putting in your email address in there, and it will be arriving on your email page every Friday. A ton of information there. Very worthwhile resource as well. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Foster. Have a great one.
Have a great July out there. All right, let's get back to our phones and say hello to Lillian, who's with us from East Lansing. Hi, Lillian. How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
I have a desktop HP Windows 7, and I have, and my antivirus program is Kaspersky.
Yep.
And I had malware bytes, and it kept wanting to update. And it's, and for me to update, I would have to take off my Kaspersky, so I didn't do that. So I uninstalled malware bytes.
Okay.
Is that something I should not have done?
Guys, what do you think?
It's not going to hurt you. I mean, you can, you can leave. I mean, malware bytes is something you want.
Right.
I do want it.
You do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you paid it, if you paid the $25, I mean, I run malware bytes on as an as-needed basis.
Yeah,
and don't let it run in the background. When you install the trial version, it does want to continue to run in the background. Right. But then after 15 days of the 30 days, it will start prompting you, do you wish to purchase this? You only have 15 more
Lillian,
days
did
left.
You, excuse me, did you pay for it, Lillian?
No, I didn't.
Okay, yeah. What it does is that after a 30-day period, it will tell you, okay, now, you want to buy this? You want to buy this? And it keeps on going like that.
Right. Now, it never said that to me. But,
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to get Windows 10.
Okay, good.
Will I lose any information if I don't have that malware byte?
No, not right now. You won't lose any information. There's a certain layer of protection. It's there for malware. In other words, when you're attacked in particular, not antivirus.
But can Lillian put malware bytes back on the free version?
Yeah.
And in when it, the only reason that it would want to upgrade is if for some reason they came out with a new version of malware bytes.
Okay.
But most likely it's just to upgrade the definitions of the malware, right?
Yeah. How do I reinstall it?
Oh, just download it again from malwarebytes.org and go for the free version and simply reinstall it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Welcome. Go ahead. You were going to say something else, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, the reason you were talking about it saying that it wanted, you know, for it to pay. There's actually two different downloads. There's a trial and a free.
Right.
If you download the free version through that install, it'll say, "Are you sure you want the free version or do you want the trial?" Stick with the free version, and it will not ask you for money.
Thanks for that clarification.
It will prompt you to update the definitions here and there.
Right,
but it won't. But you know, when you're doing the install, it will get that one last shot of trying to get you to do the trial.
So just keep your eye out.
Install the trial.
Just
it will,
do the free.
Yeah. The freeze perfectly is good.
Fred from Ohio, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Looks like you're the last person we're going to get to talk to today. How you doing?
Lucky Fred.
Good.
How can we help you?
I made some kind of error on my Internet connections. And now when I try to connect to the broadband connection, I get an error of number 651. And I've tried several things, and I can't get rid of it. You know how to get rid of it and where it came from and what it means?
Okay, tell us just kind of quickly, what operating system are you running? Windows
8.1.
Okay, you're running Windows 8.1. Okay.
Yeah.
And
what was the error again? I'm sorry.
Error 651.
Yeah.
So you're receiving this error when you launch Internet Explorer?
It's only when I try to make a broadband connection.
Well, I'm sorry. How do you make the broadband connection? Is there an icon you're pressing in your desktop?
No. You got to go back into, I forget which one. But you look up all the internet or the connections, and they give you Ethernet and...
Okay.
What's the other one?
So have you got like a DSL connection? Is that what you have? Or
you're going too fast. Say that slower.
Have you got a DSL or, I mean, who's your internet service provider?
No, this is Buckeye Cable.
Oh, it's Buckeye Cable because usually that error is associated with your dialing, like dial-up or DSL.
Well, like a PBOE or something.
I told you guys, I blew something, but when I was, and, I'm not blaming Buckeye.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Fred, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put you on hold, but you stay right there. And when we step off the air in just a moment, we're going to go back on the phones and see if we can help sort this out for you, okay?
I got time for a cocktail?
No, it's going to be right away.
Thanks, Fred. Hang on a second. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us on this very strange week here on the Internet Advisor. Mike Stead, thank you so much. Eric Dorch, thank you. And guys here in studio, Shane, Gary, and Ed, thank you so much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Don't forget that on Sunday night, tomorrow night, we will publish the entire program, the 2 hours, edited for you on our podcast. And you can go to internetadvisor.net and get it there. My name is Foster Brown. Thank you so much for being with us. And next week, this will all be rebooted.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find show notes for this podcast or others, visit internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.